Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program that is devoted to the fastest growing, largest, and most important segment of our society. To those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in our discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7635. Yesterday, I gave an update on the breakout, the pandemic of Ebola in West Africa. And I shared with you that 1,550 people had died. Yesterday, that by the end of the day, that number was changed. It's now 1,900 people. This is a extraordinarily rapidly growing pandemic. And it is the first time that Ebola has ever been experienced in large metropolitan areas like Lagos, Nigeria, capital of Liberia, as well as in cities in Guinea and Sierra Leone. There are over 3,500 people confirmed with Ebola, in addition to the nearly 2,000 that have died. The outbreak is racing far ahead of any control efforts in these countries, said the World Health Organization's head, Margaret Chan. We're unable to quarantine the disease, and as a result, it is spreading and killing. And while this is occurring, what is the United States doing? Fixated with the NATO takeover of the Ukraine? Fixated on two videos that purports to be executions of journalists preparing to go to war in Syria?
Actually, we're transporting the disease back into the States.
Yeah, right there into Minnesota. That was really handy of America to arrange the import of Ebola into this country. You sent me a message that ISIS, the Islamic State, I should say, now threatening Vladimir Putin. You know, this puts America in a really strange position. It is doing everything it can to demean and to thwart Putin in the Ukraine, and yet now, based upon this video of the Islamic State targeting Vladimir Putin, they will be attacking Putin's enemy in Syria. Just as we as Americans are claiming that we are, in fact, we legitimately are, arming the Islamic State to fight against Assad in Syria so that we can bomb them and eradicate the same weapons that we have already given to them. It is an entirely different way, I guess, of using a military. You create the foe as if they were an ally, and then you turn on that ally as if they were a foe. You arm them, and then you use your weapons to destroy the arms that you have given them. I imagine that's the ultimate way to have a state of perpetual war.
So we're against Putin, we're against ISIS, we're against Assad. ISIS is against Putin because he's with Assad, but we're against ISIS.
We're also against Iran, even though Iran is against the Islamic State. So we have to partner with Iran, with Russia, and with Assad to go after the Islamic State because they filmed a video that purports to show two American journalists killed.
And then they threatened Putin.
Makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, they threatened Putin yesterday, too. So
yeah, so here's the message. It says, this message is addressed to you, O Putin. The Islamic State now threatens Russia over its ties to Syria's Assad and promises to liberate Chechnya and all the Caucasus. You know, there's nothing but hubris amongst Muslims. It's just astonishing how grotesquely out of touch Muslims are with reality. Vladimir Putin was today directly and personally threatened by the Islamic State because of his close ties to Syrian leader Bashar Hafez al-Assad. Now, I guess we're partners with Putin because America is now engaged militarily fighting on behalf of Assad. The chilling warning delivered by a member of the terror group puts the Kremlin leader on the same side as the West in holding back Muslims. But at the same time, he remains at loggerheads with the U.S. and with Europe in the worst crisis since the Cold War.
Quick question. Russia, I know that for the gay, lesbian, LGBT agenda, they've taken a fairly reasonable stance that has been deemed to be anti-gay, lesbian.
Right.
But it's
stance is that you can do anything you want. You can be anybody you want. We don't care who you are and what you do.
We just don't
want you to politicize a sexual preference. A sexual preference should be your own business.
Yep.
Politicize it.
Which is the correct stance to have.
I think it's the correct stance. That's the stance that I happen to favor. But homosexuals don't want that stance. They want to politicize their sexual preference and push it in everybody's face. And Putin's not a fan of that.
Out of all the countries, I feel like Russia will be the one that will be like the most reluctant to take the politically correct line of, you know, I think they're going to get Putin to call him out on this, you know.
Yeah. I can see Putin says, "Okay, you talk big. Come and get me."
Yeah, come get me.
Good luck with that. But Putin's not likely to do what Obama did, which is to say that we're going to deploy our military against you. He's not going to do that.
Well, it's one of those things. You know where I am. Come find me.
That's the difference between a man that's comfortable in his own skin and a weasel. A weasel get on his soapbox so long as he's 10,000 miles away from the problem and send other people to risk their lives.
Again.
And the man that's comfortable in his own skin will say, okay, you think you're big shots? Come get me.
There was a point in time where Obama drew a line in the sand. The person crossed it. And then he didn't do anything.
Well, thank goodness he didn't do anything.
Well,
he wanted to do something.
No one
supported him. The British said that's stupid. The Russians said that's stupid. And the Russians, Putin came up with a solution that resolved the problem without starting World War III. So, yes, he drew a line in the sand and he did nothing, but thank God he did nothing. It wasn't his choice of doing nothing. He was shamed into doing nothing.
Well, he's going to run into the same thing on this. He's trying to get a coalition of people to help him on this, and most people are saying,
no one's agreeing. I mean, the furthest that they've gotten so far is the British have said, you know, we'll supply some more weapons to the Kurds. And that's about as far as any country has gone. The Australians have said, you know, we'll kind of keep our ears open and listen to what Britain decides to do. France has said, the last time we played along with you, it didn't turn out well. And the last time that you pulled together a coalition, it was all based on lies. So I don't think we're going to play either. So no, they're unable to put together a coalition. That's the reason we haven't started bombing. The United States is a sore thumb among nations, and what it strives to do is typically suicidal.
But that should tell you, that should let everybody in the entire in the country know that that's right. Where we stand. There used to be a
that
time
where
we would come out and ask for help from people, and they would willingly give it to us. And now we're at a point to where now we have to try and,
look at the first Gulf War where we lied on behalf of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. and got a huge coalition and support in the United Nations for shock and awe against Iraq. And it turned out to be a disaster. You know, Gulf War I was an unmitigated disaster. It led to one disaster after another. And so, no, we're no longer in a position where we are credible. When we say, for example, that Russia's involved in the Ukraine directly, when the United States is actually involved in the Ukraine, funding it and orchestrating the military attack on Donetsk and Luhansk, we're not credible. Our words are not believed by anyone. You know, we show a picture of a line of trucks and we say, these are Russian trucks. Well, how would you know if they're Russian trucks? I mean, a truck is a truck. They're all the East made vehicles for the Russian army. So there's a line of trucks. You couldn't distinguish a line of trucks that were Ukrainian, that were confiscated from by the rebels, or that were Russians. They would be indistinguishable. So your satellite picture is a line of trucks, and you want to, for us to believe that Russia has invaded? You know, if Russia invaded the Ukraine, Ukraine would not be an independent country at this point. And it's just so ludicrous. Everything we say is jaundiced, hypocritical, and dishonest. So no, we're not believed. Anyway, in this particular video, which was aired on Al Arabiya television, and it says here an ISIS rebel. There are no ISIS rebels. There'd be an Islamic State. Mujahideen sits in the cockpit of a captured Russian-made fighter aircraft. Now, this is really funny because the pictures are all over the internet, and what you've got is these four guys all barefoot, dressed in, you know, barbaric-looking Muslim jihadist kind of gear, not in army kind of gear at all, not as a militia, but all, you know, one guy's got his white robes, another guy's got his thigh pants on, and you know, one's got a turban. It's just a motley collection of guys, all of which are barefoot, and they're walking. One's on the wing, one standing on the nose, one standing behind the cockpit, and one is kind of straddling the cockpit. I mean, it makes blazing saddles look sane. And that's the threat. Do you think Putin's concerned? Yes, this comedy. I mean, I would encourage you to Google the Islamic State's threat to Putin and to Russia so that you can see the video and the pictures. Because they've got one kid that's probably 12 years old that's playing jihadist standing on top of the aircraft, and a guy, bushy bearded fellow, very poorly kept, that's then goes from straddling the cockpit to sitting in the cockpit, and he says, "This message is addressed to you, O Vladimir Putin. These are your aircraft which you sent to Bashar. And with the help of Allah, we will send them back to you." Well, I'll tell you what. Unless Satan is a pilot and can fly an airplane, I will guarantee you that those aircraft are not going back to Russia. But beyond all of that, how would they get them there? You know, the useful range on a fighter is a couple of hours worth of flying. They aren't getting to Russia. And based upon the pictures that they've taken here, there ain't anybody could fly them. I mean, that video is as big a joke as the videos of the two alleged beheadings. Remember this, and with the permission of Allah, we will liberate Chechnya and all the Caucasus. See, it's always got to be with the help of Allah, with the will of Allah, if Allah wills, with the permission of Allah. It's the fate is the fatalistic predestination is the one of the many problems of Islam. In Islam, according to Muhammad, everything is predestined. Your fate is predestined before you're born. Now, that being the case, there's no reason to be a jihadist because, you know, your soul is either going to go to heaven or hell regardless of what you do, if it is predestined. And so the whole myth of dynasty jihadists and going directly to Allah as a martyr is absurd. But you don't expect Muslims to be rational. Religious people aren't rational, and the least rational religious people are Muslims. The Islamic State exists, and it will exist, and it will expand with the help of Allah. Your throne is already shaking. Vladimir doesn't have a throne. Russia is doing better than ever. The Islamic State is a loose confederation of cities. And Allah was never any help even to Muhammad. You know, if you read the Quran set into the context of the Hadith and in chronological order, what you find is that Allah never engaged on behalf of Muhammad. Muhammad never was able to predict the future, was never able to perform any miracle. Allah never engaged, even on behalf of Muhammad. So why do you think, dear Islamic fighter, that Allah is going to engage on your behalf? Went on to say, it is in danger and it will collapse when we get to you. We are on the way with Allah's permission. Satan's just got to love these bumbling fools. Well, we turn to a Reuters article. We find that after their lightning takeover in June, flag-waving Islamic State militants paraded through captured Iraqi cities like Mosul, in looted U.S.-built Humvees, armored cars, and pickup trucks mounted with heavy machine guns, you know, all of which they either confiscated when the American armed troops in Iraq surrendered and retreated, or in the case of their 50-caliber machine guns mounted in the back of pickup trucks that were given to them via Qatar to fight Bashar al-Assad. Today, they have ditched their military-type vehicles that would make them easy targets of U.S. airstrikes, and they blend in with the residents, witnesses say. While still terrifying, they are now far more discreet. So they are very much like what America faced in Vietnam. You can't tell the good guys from the bad guys. They're just like what America faced when we invaded Iraq. You couldn't tell a mujahideen that was there to kill you from just an ordinary Muslim who wished you were dead, but wouldn't himself kill you. That's the situation. So if America wishes to bomb, as the case with Mosul, let's say that America's estimates of 8 to 20,000 members of the Islamic State exist, and they are in cities of 2 and 3 million people. How many civilians would America have to kill even a fraction of the Islamic State jihadists? 20,000? 200,000? 2 million? What's the consequence of doing that? We'll go back to Shattering This. A Reuters examination of 3 weeks of U.S. airstrikes reveals significant changes in the way the Islamic State operates since the U.S. joined the struggle against them, with fewer militants on the street of Mosul as a clear sign. What does that mean? That means if we wish to use air power to stop them, you know, and Obama doesn't just want to diminish their effectiveness, he wants to destroy them. So the U.S. estimates are anywhere from 8,000 to 20,000 members of the Islamic State. Now, I want to tell you, if there are 8 to 20,000 members of the Islamic State, they are supermen. That picture of them barefoot on the Russian-Syrian jet just cannot represent them. The botched videos of purported beheadings most certainly can't represent them, because they would have to be superhuman to control somewhere between a third and half of Syria, somewhere between a third and half of Iraq, and using captured and given American weapons to perpetrate their rule. Particularly when you realize that in Syria, Assad has hundreds of thousands in his army, and in addition to that, there are hundreds of thousands of members of Hezbollah. And yet, you want us to believe that perhaps there are 4 to 10,000 Islamic State jihadists in Syria, and maybe another 4 to 10,000 in Iraq, and yet in Iraq, the army that America has equipped was almost 1 million strong. And on top of that, there's another 500,000 to 600,000 Shia militants, plus the backing of Iran. And you want the world to believe that 4 to 10,000 Islamic State militants are able to pummel them, embarrass them, get them to retreat, lose 90% of the battles? But let's say that the American numbers are right. Let's go into the land of make-believe and say that the numbers are right. And let's use the compromise number of about 15,000. And let's say there's 15,000 Islamic jihadists in the most populated cities of eastern Syria and western Iraq. The cities would have a combined population of in the range of 10 million. How are you going to bomb 15,000 people amongst 10 million? How are you going to do that? You know, when Israel tried to eradicate the leadership of Hamas, targeting Hamas leadership, even knowing the cell phone numbers of the population that lived around them and notified the population, you need to move out of the way. We're coming for the leader of, you know, Hamas's militant wing and going to start dropping bombs in about 15 minutes. So you may want to leave. Even doing that, dropping leaflets, doing everything they could possibly do to encourage civilians to move away from the jihadists, they still killed 10 times more women and children than they did actual jihadists. And they know that area like the back of their hands. They have embedded intelligence officers in that area. They have all sorts of collaborators in that region. It's a very tiny area. It's right next door to them. They used to occupy it. Now, you try to do that in Iraq and Syria, where we don't have collaborators, where we don't have the cell phone numbers of all of the civilians, where we don't even know who is part of the Islamic State and who's not. And you want to bomb them in these civilian centers? I mean, to kill 2,000, you would probably have to kill 200,000. And if you killed, even if you only killed 20,000 to kill 2,000, what do you think that's going to do to Islamic rage against America? You think that America is vulnerable to the Islamic State because it killed a couple of journalists? What's going to happen when the United States bombs 20,000 Muslim women and children into oblivion and kills 2,000 jihadists in the process? And should the 20,000 number be right, they'd have to kill 200,000 Islamic women and children. What's that going to do to the recruiting efforts of the Islamic State, to their desire to terrorize America, to their willingness to sacrifice their lives to kill Americans? There is no rational way that American can prevail against the Islamic State by bombing Syria or bombing Iraq. It will only make the situation worse. For 12 years, I've been talking about the stupidity of America's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. I predicted everything that has occurred. And now, before America's airstrikes, I'm telling you that the consequence will be just the same. That we will exacerbate a bad situation. We will do what we have already done. Make a bad situation much worse. There is no hope of a favorable outcome. And when you cannot achieve a favorable outcome, there is no justification in sacrificing lives to kill people, to destroy things. We've already broken Iraq once. We've already armed the Mujahideen in Syria, so that country is broken. We're not going to gain anything by breaking it all over again. The reason that there are no nations willing to join with the United States in attacking the Islamic State is because it's a counterproductive, foolhardy endeavor that has a zero chance of success. The reason that the Obama nation hasn't announced a plan to start bombing away is because there is no plan. Simply dropping bombs is not a plan. There is no plan. There is no way whatsoever under any circumstances that we can prevail. This is not like World War II. If you were to have killed Hitler early on, things might have been different. You were to kill Ibrahim, Bakr al-Baghdadi, as we like to call him. Someone takes over in his role, and there is no difference. They don't lose anything. If you were to kill the top 100 leaders of the Islamic State, 100 more would pop up. These folks aren't like so many who have come before them in different countries with different agendas. You know, this is not like Hitler with Mein Kampf and his own personal religion and political mantra and his desire to elevate himself and to be dictator of the world. That is not what is occurring here. These are simply good Muslims. They don't have their own agenda. Their playbook is the Quran. They're following Muhammad's example. There are 1.5 billion of them. You can't kill that many people. This battle against Islam cannot be won by killing. Now, it can be won by quarantine. You can say, you know, that's your part of the world, you just stay there. We won't mess with you, and you don't mess with us. We could bleed it dry by becoming energy independent and cutting off the purchase of OPEC oil and Middle Eastern oil. No Islamic country has an economy that's capable of running without the influx of petrodollars. Pretty simple. There's not much to it. But once again, the strategy that the Obaminator wishes to follow, the strategy that his predecessor, the grotesque idiot, King George II, followed, is destined to backfire. It's suicidal. If you think that the Islamic State is a threat to Americans now because they showed a video of two non-beheadings, you just wait. Wait and see what happens when America stops bombing Syria on behalf of Bashar al-Assad. See what happens when America aligns itself with Shia Islam to go against Sunni Islam. The devastation will be beyond imagination. And that's exactly what we have put ourselves in this position. There is no winning. There is only losing. It's a very serious series of blunders that America is now engaged in. As we continue to examine this particular article that is delineating the very problem that America is now engaged in, we find that the Islamic State is adapting its entire manifestation to completely eliminate America's ability to thwart them from the air. And after forging agreements with armed Sunni groups like the Awakening Program, they are now indistinguishable from the Sunni population of those countries, which are in the tens of millions. This particular Reuters article says that large areas of Syria and Iraq are under the control of radical offshoot of Al-Qaeda and will be difficult to wrest away from them if Iraq's Shiite political leaders fail to appease disgruntled Sunnis, many of whom have embraced the Islamic State after what they describe as years of discrimination and persecution. It is just flabbergasting that America is still, and journalists are still fixated on this notion that the Islamic State is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda. They were never part of Al-Qaeda. When it first emerged in Iraq, there was zero presence. When America invaded Iraq, there was absolutely no presence of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were archenemies. The Islamic State in Iraq emerged as a direct response to the U.S. invasion. It was homegrown. It was formed by an Islamic imam, preacher, who became known as al-Baghdadi. Was never part of the Islamic State. Now, they were never part of Al-Qaeda. During Osama bin Laden's lifetime, some of the letters that we found when we murdered him and raided his Pakistani home was that he was constantly writing letters to the likes of the Islamic State saying, you know, that I want nothing to do with you. You're not in any way, shape, or form following my agenda. And so even when Osama bin Laden was alive and it was just the Islamic State and Iraq, there was no connection between the two. They were archenemies, even. Yeah, they shared Islam in common, but they were extraordinarily different. And certainly one was not a franchise of the other. The Islamic State then became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria when they moved a significant part of their operation into Syria because jihadists in Syria were being armed with very powerful weapons vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia and Qatar to push back the rise and power of Shiite Islam as a result of America having given Iraq to Iran. And so they wanted the Saudi Arabians, the Kuwaitis, hate the Iranians and Shiite Islam. And so the Islamic State became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria for the express purpose of being part of that jihad and receiving those weapons. Those weapons were then brought back into Iraq, and in a union with the Awakening Program, which was very heavily armed by Petraeus in the United States, they formed a very formidable force and were able to beat the Iranian army that America had equipped and trained, even when outnumbered. And now they control huge swaths of territory and are extraordinarily well-armed. I mean, that's who they are. You know, and they have never been part of Al-Qaeda. No, about 6 months ago, 9 months ago, al-Zawahiri didn't say, I'm disavowing you. He didn't say, I'm pulling your franchise. He didn't say, we will no longer have anything to do with you. His statement was really clear. We have nothing to do with you. They've never had anything to do with the Islamic State. Ever. It's not an Al-Qaeda offshoot. But the media wants to present that because they don't want to equate the Islamic State with Islam, which is the only thing that matters to the participants in the Islamic State. They are so much larger, so much more effective, so much better armed, so much more popular than Al-Qaeda was at its peak 15 years ago when America was deploying them. That the comparisons are ludicrous, and they're even more absurd when you think of Al-Qaeda being big and the Islamic State being an offshoot. It's the other way around. I mean, we're looking at the flea and the elephant here. The elephant is the Islamic State. The flea is Al-Qaeda. We need to change our mentality so that we understand that they have nothing in common other than Islam, and that one is not an offshoot of the other, and that there is no way to resolve the problem of Sunnis in the now Shia-dominated Iraq since America gave it to Iran. It can't be done.